Welcome to Cleaning Business Life. My name is Shannon Miller, and I am your host and founding member of Clean Freaks University. This show is sponsored by the Structure, Scale, and Profit Cleaning Business Academy, my signature program. And I'm also joined by my co-host, Kimberly Gonzalez, inventor extraordinaire of Pure Evergreen Cleaning Products. Kim, take it away.
Today, we so appreciate it. Angela, I've known you for years. I can remember back when I first joined your group. And I was like a newbie and asking all those newbie questions. And here I am today. I'm like, ooh, it's like cleaning. I know all this stuff about cleaning. And Shannon, how long have you known Angela?
I've known of Angela for a long time. I probably follow the same route as you. And I've known her because she has been in another, I'm in another group with her. And sometimes she's a speaker. So I've seen her that way as well. So yes, I've known you for quite some time now. But probably not as long as you have. And obviously, Angela knows herself pretty well. So,
yeah, Angela, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and just your experience in the cleaning industry and like what inspired you to first get started, like from the very, very beginning? I think we'd all like to know. Even I would like to know because I don't even know like how you even got started from the beginning.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me here today. I love coming on shows like this where I can get to hang out with other cool cleaners. So this is awesome for me. For those of you that are just joining us, I'm Angela Brown. I run a company called Savvy Cleaner. We're an international training company for house cleaners and maids. And we do training and certification. And we are in 131 languages and 31 countries. So we're all over the globe. But how I got started was I grew up not liking to clean. I ran from every job that I possibly could. My mother said, hey, can you help me out around the house? I'm like, no, not me. My dad did inspections twice a day. He had a military background and he ran around our house with a checklist and he had a white glove. And he would run it over the tops of the doors. And if there was any dust and you were responsible for cleaning that room that day, you did not eat dinner. And so you learned really quickly, like, oh, if I'm hungry, I got to clean. And so we had all of our jobs were like on this rotating schedule in our house. And so everyone in my house learned how to clean. And I'm from a large family. I'm one of 19 kids and I'm the fourth to the oldest. Yeah. So we all learned how to clean. So oddly enough, I have seven sisters and six of them have owned house cleaning companies. So as we grew up in the world, we're like, what do we know? Oh, we know how to clean. So we became house cleaners. And I did not want to have a house cleaning company. That was not my goal. I was never going to grow up to be a cleaning lady. Like, not ever. That's not cool. And it's cool now. It wasn't cool then. and I waited tables at a restaurant when I moved away from home. And one of the waiters that worked at the restaurant started a cleaning company. And she was like, hey, Angela, check it out. She said, we can wait tables at night and we can clean houses during the day. I was like, oh, that is so cool. So she hired me. And I went to work with her and I lasted exactly one day. I was cleaning a house and I was watching her clean. Now I came from the background where we cleaned and did inspections twice a day. And she lifted up a rug and she swept the dust underneath it as if to hide
it. Oh my gosh.
I kid you not. And I looked at her like, oh no way, people are paying you to do that. You are so gonna get fired. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking, I just joined her company, which means my reputation is on the line and people are going to think that's how I clean. That is not how I clean. I would get a gig. A gig is like a military term for you did a bad thing and on dad's checklist, right? This is like not cool. I would get a gig for this if I got caught. So at the end of the day, I quit. I was like, I can't work for you. And there were a lot of cutting corners, sloppy work that we did that day, but we got paid $150. And I was like, wait a second, I'm in the wrong business. And so I started my own cleaning company the next day and I did not take her client. I did not. I went, I found my own client, but I decided that there needed to be a standard in the industry. And one of the things that I love about Shannon running a university for cleaners is that there has to be a standard. And if you don't follow a standard, please contact Shannon and follow her process and her methods for this reason. There has to be a standard and it has to be across the board because we're asking people to live in a particular environment. Okay. And we're asking them, hey, we're going to come clean your house because you deserve to live in a clean space. And if you're going to pay a professional cleaner to clean, please get with Shannon and learn the rules of what that means. Okay. Because we're not going to wing it. We're not going to be sweeping dust underneath people's rugs. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be spraying chemicals where we are experimenting on customers' appliances and granite countertops and flooring and things like that. We're not going to do that. Okay. That's not cool.
No.
So if you're going to go the route of a cleaner, learn what that means. Learn what that means. And if you are the homeowner and you are hiring the cleaner, please find out what it means to hire a cleaning company that has been through training and they know what they're doing. Don't just hire the cheapest person that comes along, because as Kimberly will tell you, the cheapest is not always the best.
Right. I tell you, my dad's military, so I can totally experience your whole military background, because I remember him going into my room and he would look at every surface and lift up every little thing, and my room had to be spotless. So I was in the same situation as you are. And so I think that's why I started cleaning, you know, at a young age. And then I just kept putting off, no, I'm not doing it, like you, because we were raised in such a crazy environment. But it does, it's taught us standards. And I love that it's taught us such good, healthy standards on how to, what is clean. Thanks, dads, for the great military background.
I think that's awesome.
So,
Angela, what kind of trends do you see coming up? I know there's a lot of shifting going on in our industry and the economy in general. I know that our industry has grown exponentially, especially in the last 3 years, especially when we were considered essential. Where do you see the industry as a whole and housekeeping industry as a whole going in the next 1 to 3 years, maybe 5 years?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Cleaning is one of those things that's not going away, and yeah, it never went away. And I mean, we all remember our grandmother's cleaning. And so unfortunately, many of us learned how to clean from our grandmothers, and we figured out these old wives' tales and old tricks and things that we found later were probably not the most effective way.
Right.
One of the things that's really cool is Procter & Gamble took a study years ago, and they started realizing that the products we have, we created in a lab with people that don't actually clean for a living. And we're not really sure if this is how people clean. And they did these really interesting studies where they sent their technicians out to go inside people's homes and to watch people clean. And when they learned about how people are cleaning, they're like, our products are actually not the best for the consumer at all. Mm-hmm. And so some of the trends that we've seen in the last 15 to 20 years, and it's kind of an ongoing thing right now, is we're seeing better tools with better equipment and better reusability. So, for example, one of the things that they discovered on this little journey that they went on is that we were taking a mop. And I did this when I started my cleaning business because I didn't know any better. And this is how my grandmother did it. We would take a mop and we would put it in a mop bucket. And we would wet the mop. We would wring out the mop and we would mop the floor. Then we would dip it back in the same mop bucket. And then we squeeze it out again because it's now wet again. And we would keep mopping the floor, not realizing that dirty mop that we just mopped the floor with went back in the clean water. We just muddied it up again. We rinsed it off and we mopped the floor. And now we're spreading this dirty water all over the floor. Mm-hmm. And so in the last few years, some of the trends that we've seen, we've gone to a flat mop head that you can mm-hmm. peel off and it goes in the washing machine. And so no longer are we using those ring mops. And I was cleaning it, my cleaning business, and I had a different mop for every customer. And I was trying to do my own version of keep it in one house and don't cross-contaminate. I like, what do you do? And they stopped making the mop heads. And I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, no.
Like, there's a trend. I know. Something new is happening here. And then we went to flat mops and I hated them. I'm like, oh, no. I can't mop the mop boards and the floor at the same time with these weird little flat mops. This is weird and unusual and different. And that's okay. But what we have to realize is that they're different is okay. And we have to make adjustments and adaptations. In the early stages of my business, I found electrostatic dusters and I was in mm-hmm. love. I was like, these are awesome. And they would just pick up dust. And then I would try to like wash them out like in a reusable fashion. And then they would just get gunked together, like mm-hmm. really, really matted together. And then they looked crappy. And then I was like, what do I do now? And I was never a fan of the ostrich dusters because I wasn't a fan of the PETA version of pulling and plucking ostrich feathers mm-hmm. from live ostriches. That like broke my heart. And so when Swiffer Duster came on the planet, and this is not sponsored, I'm not trying to promote them or anything, but they have a disposable, well, it looks like this. It's a disposable duster head that goes on top of a little handle. And I liked that for this reason. And you talk about the trends. One of the trends we became aware of, especially painfully aware of during the pandemic, is cross-contamination.
Right.
And when you have a disposable duster head, there are reusable versions of the same thing. But when you have a disposable duster head, here's the comfort. And we're talking about customers and peace of mind. When you go into a customer's house and you dust, you touch everything in their house with one duster. If you take that duster and then go to the next customer's house, which is what we were doing with electrostatic dusters, You then touch everything in the next customer's house with that same duster, you just cross-contaminated a whole lot of things. And so I love the trend, and I hated the duster in the beginning. I was like, to throw it away, I don't like that. And they're expensive. And I had all these barriers against changing what I knew.
Right.
But what I realized was this is actually safer for the client. And so in order for me to not cross-contaminate, take germs from one customer's house, and I just touched everything in their whole house with a duster, and I'm going to go touch everything in someone else's house with a duster, like, not cool, not cool at all.
No.
Right. So when new trends started coming in, I started just looking with curiosity, like, what is this? And why did there need to be a need for this on the market? And I think when we talk about trends, it's not a trend, but it's why is there a trend? Why is something new being brought to us? Is there actually a market demand? And if the answer is yes, why is that? Why have we made a change? If what we were always doing worked, why did we need to make a change? And that need to make a change often reveals a whole bunch of things for us. Like one of the things that we switched to was the microfiber cloths. And that came somewhere halfway in my career. Why microfiber cloths? Because they hold 7 times their weight in water. Imagine this. Instead of a wet, soppy mop that I'm mopping a floor with and it leaves standing water. And if you've ever done this, you put like a bath towel on the floor and then you stand on top of it and you do the shimmy trying to dry the floor. That's yeah, how we had to do that, right?
Right. I remember.
But with the microfiber mop heads, and this is a trend in the industry, it absorbs 7 times its weight in water, which means I can wring out a microfiber mop head and I can mop and that will stay wet so much longer. And so I can mop more of the floor and I can cover more of the area without backtracking and dirtying, taking a dirty mop and going over the same area or leave standing water on the floor. And so the trends that I've seen in the industry are all progressive, but they're all so badly needed because what we've done now is we're smarter than we've ever been. Our technology is better than it's ever been. We have tools that we've never had before and at a level we've never had access to them. So like with YouTube and TikTok and whatever, we can see and learn about products that are like, hey, wait a second, this is really cool. And I hate that it took a global pandemic for the entire world to go, wait a second. Cleaning, sanitizing, and disinfecting. And yet they did. Thank goodness. Now the entire world understands the importance of keeping our homes clean and sanitary and making sure that, oh yes, we deserve to live in a clean space.
Definitely. It's definitely a peace of mind when you come home and your house is tidy and orderly and you don't have to focus on that aspect of your life. It's really a nice thing. Definitely.
We'll be back after a quick break.
When it comes to influencer marketing, there's a podcast that covers it all that you will want to add to your playlist. The Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. They talk about influencer marketing, social media, the creator economy, social commerce, and much, much more. They cover all aspects, including the creator economy, social commerce, the latest trends, the metaverse, TikTok trends, and that's just the beginning. The Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. Add the podcast to your playlist right now.
So I guess my question is like, what are some common challenges that you feel like cleaning business owners face right now? And how can they overcome those challenges?
That's a great question. And it's a trick question because it's not like in 2023, house cleaners had this problem, but they're ongoing, they're ongoing problems that have always been and always will be. And some of them are basic things like, how do you vet a cleaner? How do you know what type of a cleaner you should hire? And how do you run ads for that cleaner? And how do you interview that cleaner? And how do you train that cleaner? And how do you guarantee that when you send that cleaner out, that cleaner is going to be an extension of your company brand? And if you skip any of those steps, you're going to have some problems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so this is not the stories.
Well, and it's not a new problem, but it's people taking shortcuts going, oh, well, I know how to clean. Therefore, I know how to be a business owner. Let me check. No, you do not. And that's the situation I found myself in when I started my house cleaning company. I was a professional house cleaner for 25 years out in the field. And during that time, I realized a bunch of things. Like, we immediately started doing very, very well. And within a matter of about 2 months, I had 3 employees working underneath me. Mm-hmm. And I realized, wait a second, I overshot my enthusiasm. I don't know how to manage people. I don't know how to hire people. And I don't know the kinds of people to hire. And our first inclination, forgive me for saying this, is we want to hire family and friends because those are the people that we know. But they don't always make the best cleaners.
No. Nope.
And one of the challenges, if you ask me, what are some of the challenges? One of the challenges, hiring somebody with whom you have no boundaries. And let me say that again, you hire friends and family. And these are people that have seen you at midnight and they've seen you when you're drunk, or they've seen you when your guard is down. And so they think, oh, this is just my buddy and I can kind of push them to the limits and the rules don't apply to me because I'm the relative. Okay. That's not going to help you run a business. So some of the challenges I see on a regular recurring basis are professional cleaning companies that think that they can hire their friends to whom they have no boundaries and then expect them to put them in a boundary type situation that say, you will show up on time. I don't have to show up on time. You're my cousin.
Right.
Right.
We talk about boundaries all the time, don't we, Shannon?
Almost every day.
Well, those are some of the things that will cause recurring havoc in any business.
Right.
And so the rule is this. If you're going to run a business, not just a cleaning business, but any business, and you're going to hire friends and family, you must treat them like an employee.
Right.
And so what that means is, and this is going to sound really weird, but you must have a job interview and you must sit down and you must ask them all the same questions that you would ask a perfect stranger. Yeah. And then when you're done, you have to say, here is all the paperwork that I need you to sign. What? I'm your mother. You want me to sign that? I do. And it's going inside your employee file. And I'm going to keep track of every move. And if I have to write you up, I'm going to write you up just like every other employee. And the reason you have to do that is because if you don't treat them like an employee, it breaks down morale with everyone else in the company.
Yes.
And then what happens? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what happens is they think they're getting special treatment because I'm the relative. And then what happens is everyone else thinks, why are they treating me like this? They're giving me the extra responsibility when they didn't give it to another employee because that other employee is a relative.
Right.
And then when that employee goes out into the world, i.e. in front of your customers, are they an extension of your brand because they're proud of your company and because they're proud of you? Or are they sharing the, oh, yeah, we hang out together on the weekends and mm-hmm. they know that version of you and that's the version they're sharing with your customers?
Exactly. I'm guilty of hiring I was forced by a family member to hire a cousin who cost me, I think the end result was like $78,000.
Oh,
and I'm still not allowed to participate in any of the holiday functions. And I have a lot of relatives in I live in a small town. But yeah, still to this day, I had to fire my cousin that I did not want to hire. But she cost me a lot of money and she did all of those things that you just named. So, and we still don't talk to this day. It's been 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It you know what? It's the guilt. Guilt played a lot into it. My uncle coerced me into, can you please do this for her? And I'm like, I don't normally do this for friends or family. It never ends up good. Oh, please, she doesn't have any other opportunities, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And then if you know, then you could get the shucking, okay, I'm gonna kick my foot, and then you know, okay. So, and that's what happened, exactly as you described it.
But let me ask you this question, Shannon. If you were to do that today, what would you do differently?
I would not. I have had a couple of other cousins come out and ask me for it. And I just politely say, you know, I just don't mix it. It just never works out. But thanks for the mm-hmm. consideration. I really appreciate, you know, the honor of you coming out and giving me an opportunity to see if I might be a good fit for you and your employment needs. But I usually just say no. It's just because of what happened.
And then the answer. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm in this situation where I do hire a friend, but I put those boundaries in place from the very start. She's actually right here today working, and she's amazing. And I just gave her a raise, but I did the same thing. Like, I gave her a review and I had to write down a review, and then we added more job responsibilities, but we listed them out. And so this, she knows what's expected of her. And I think, like you said, once those boundaries are in place, and she's been phenomenal, she's been working with me for almost 2 years.
Right.
And I love the dynamic difference between these two stories, mm-hmm. but the result is the same. If we were to do it again, we would do differently what we know now. Mm-hmm. And what we know now is that there's a business, and the business has to be run a certain way in order to survive. Right. Kimberly has figured out the way, and now Shannon would do it differently based on, and I'm guessing you learned by trial and error. After you've gone through it.
It was an awful and very expensive error to have made. And I would never, it would never happen again, ever. It's just that door is closed.
And that's how we learn. Sometimes mm-hmm. we make mistakes in our business and we're like, whoa, that so didn't work for me. What do I have to do right now so that this never happens again? And as both of these ladies have explained to us today, should they move forward doing whatever, you know, hiring somebody, would you hire family again? Maybe, maybe not. But here are the new rules. Here are the new parameters. Here are the new right. guidelines. Mm-hmm. And I think that's key in order to survive. And so those are some of the challenges that cleaning business owners face, is they repeat the same errors over and over again and don't learn those lessons.
I agree. It's you hear it too. You get the same stories, you know, why this isn't working for me. And then when you get them on the phone, they go, oh, I'm doing this. I'm like, you're treating your 1099s like W-2s. You need to put a boundary in there, or you're going to get audited, and it's going to be 10 mm-hmm. grand and fines and penalties and all of these things. There's actually a cleaning business owner who I'm not going to name names, who has only 1099s. They're all wearing uniforms and they're all driving company cars. I'm like, you need to stop. Right.
Big red flag.
Right. And I'm like, you need to fix this. And, you know, this is the steps that you need to take, whether it was with me or you or somebody else, but you need to fix this, or they're going to go back like 5 years and go, you owe us all of this money mm-hmm. today. So it happens.
Well, and when you talk about compliance, it's really important to realize that there are rules in place.
Right.
And you just mentioned 1099s treated as employees. There are rules in place for a reason. And the reasons are, and we'll just talk about this one for just a second if we might.
Sure.
When you treat an employee like a 1099, what happens is when something malfunctions and they're not covered on your workman's comp because you didn't give them workman's comp because they're a 1099, what happens then is they're going to sue your company, and it's going to be far more than if you'd have paid that insurance in yeah. the first place.
Right.
Right. So there are little tiny steps that have been put in place to protect the business owner. And right. I know it's easy. We live in a world of shortcuts. Everybody wants a shortcut. Everybody wants a discount. Everybody wants a deal. And the deal is, believe it or not, check this out. The deal is compliance. The deal is compliance. When you're in compliance, it's going to cost you a little bit more money to make sure that your employees are insured, to make sure that you have auto insurance on those cars that the independent contractors are mm-hmm. driving. And I do this like air quotes, they should be employees, because right. if they are driving company cars and you don't have an auto insurance policy on those cars, if they get in an accident, even if the car is insured, but it was on a job, it's a wrapped car, it looks like a company car, your insurance company is not going to cover it.
Oh,
and so you
awful.
Run in you run into all these scenarios where you're like, well, that's not going to happen to me. Knock on wood, because it could.
Yeah, anything is possible. Anything can happen. Why take that chance? So, and then can you share us some success stories or strategies for tackling difficult business decisions that you had to make? So like when you got started, like what were some of the business decisions that you had to make that you had to tackle, and then a success story to go with it? Cause I'm all big on like seeing the negative, but finding the positive in that negative.
On a grand scale, there are probably 10,000 stories I have where I succeeded after having failed. And I think the failure comes first. And so the first thing before I jump into any stories is I want to suggest that you must be willing to fail, because if you're not willing to fail, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to succeed. And like Shannon said, where she hired a family member and her gut instinct said, don't do this. This is not cool. She did it anyway, trying to help somebody out. And it was with the best of intentions. And I want to highlight that, because with the best of intentions, sometimes we make our biggest mistakes in business. And one of the best intentions that I had, this is one of my biggest failure stories to this day, one of my biggest regrets, I hired a person that I wanted to help. They really needed some help. They needed to get a second chance. And I hired them. And I was like, I can save this person. And so I gave them the job, and they did an amazing job. And with the money that they earned, they bought an Airbnb. And I was like, yes, I helped this person get back on their feet and get grounded and start a side hustle, and look at them now. Well, the person, I don't know why, they must have had some kind of issues going on. We won't go into all the psychological issues of what they might have been, but they wanted to torpedo the other members of the team, maybe to make themselves look better or something. So they would hijack the records of the other employees and they would tweak them. And so the other person turning in their records would then have errors on their records that would include a whole bunch of work that had to be redone. So I kept going to the other workers saying, I thought you turned this in on time. How come you didn't do this? Why haven't you done this? And it made everyone else in the company look bad, except this one superstar that was glowing with all of the amazing stuff she did.
Wow.
And I started saying something is not right here. Like, everyone can't be a screw up. Right? Like, everyone can't be. That's impossible. And so it took me about a year to unravel what exactly was happening. And it got to the point where people would turn in their work to me and I would have them screenshot it. I would screenshot it. Within 24 hours, it was all bugaboo. I was like, who has access to that record that's on our team? Like, who is doing this? And our team was so big. It took me about a year to narrow down which person it was. And I had to cut off access for different parts of the website and different CRM stuff. I had to cut people out of. And I kept saying, look, I don't think it's you, but go with me on this. Right. And I had people screenshotting pictures of their screens. It was crazy stuff.
Exhausting.
It was exhausting. And it made me think I was going crazy. I was like, what is happening here? But the worst part of it is I kind of suspected, like I started narrowing it down to the one person, and I kind of suspected. And while I was in the process of trying to make sure that I wasn't just firing my superstar unnecessarily, I let her stay with the company for about a year too long. She was with the company for 2 years. I let her stay with the company about a year too long. And during that 1 year that she stayed, that was the year too long, the morale of the company took a nosedive, and all the other people on the team started second guessing me as the boss.
Right.
And they stopped trusting me as the boss. And I was trying to make the best decision possible. And I kept taking people aside saying, hey, something's going on here. And I didn't want to give them full transparency and say, here's what's happening, because I didn't want them to lose total faith in the company. But I said, there's an issue going on behind the scenes that I'm trying to resolve. And here's what I need from you for your help in the matter. And I was still taking this woman aside, telling her the same thing. She's probably like, oh, goody, goody, it's working, right?
Oh, man.
And when I was 100% clear that that's the person it was, and I documented everything along the way, because when you fire an employee for undue cause, that can also backfire on you. So I had to have really detailed stuff in every single person's employee file. And it was this huge, chaotic thing that probably took 2 years off my life and added 10 years to my age. But when I fired her, I realized there were there were red flags all along the way. And because she was a superstar, I chose to ignore those red flags. And had I paid closer attention, I probably would have done things differently. And like Shannon's story earlier, what do you do when you know you've made a mistake, and how do you fix it? And what is the long-term residual effect? And right now, Shannon is not having Christmas with her family because of a situation where she had the best of intentions. Okay. She tried to make it work with this cousin that she didn't want to hire, but because the cousin needed a job and she was trying to do a favor to another family member, trying to put money in this person's pocket so they could put food on the table for their kids. Those are all valiant responses to, I don't want to help you, but I'm going to. Okay. And so Shannon did all the right things. With a couple of tweaks, it could have ended differently. And in my situation, it could have as well. And I really wanted to help this person. I really wanted to. And sometimes, and this goes back to the question, when do cleaning business owners make mistakes? It's when we want something for someone more than they want it for themselves.
True.
When we want someone to live in a clean house and they don't want it for themselves, we can clean all we want. We come back 2 weeks later and it's a mess again, right? We have a tendency, we want something so badly for someone that we need them to be on the same page and we need to want that for themselves. And in this situation, I had to let the lady go, and I promised myself this. I learned from this situation, and I will never again put the rest of my team at risk because I'm trying to manage something that I don't know what is going on. Right. And so right now, from the very beginning, I call everybody out. I say, hey, listen, what's going on right now? Because right now, if we can't resolve this right here, right now, everybody loses their job. What's up? Somebody has to come clean and say, oh, here's what's going on. And we've had a few, I'm going to call them prayer meetings, where we've had to call everybody out and say, something is not right. What is it? Let's get to the bottom of it. And I hate to be this in your face person, but right now we have an issue and we're not going till tomorrow without this being resolved. And then we have to knock down, drag it out. Let's solve it. Let's never come back here again. And there will be tears. And sometimes a person walks out the door and they take the boot, but I would rather fire them right now and protect the rest of the team than put the entire team at risk for one superstar that had an ego problem or something.
It's having a team is an investment. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes behind every single member that you pick to be on your team. And the repercussions, if you hadn't had your prayer circle or meeting, your whole team could have walked out and quit on you. And that's never a fun situation to be in either. So kudos to you. I love that. I've done that myself, usually in smaller groups. When I was in the restaurant industry, I used to have to place one against the other to find out who was, you know, you don't want to say liar, liar, pants on fire. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which one of you is not telling me the truth? But yeah, it's sometimes that's the quickest way to get to the bottom of whatever the situation is, because of personalities and because of ego, you know. I'm just happy to be here is what I always tell everyone. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm upright and, you know, hallelujah. And I'm just happy to be here. And they're like, well, what about this, this, and this? And you're like, oh, don't worry. You know, they get all involved because your head gets in the way a lot of times. That was the problem with my cousin. My head got in the way and I was trying to do a favor for my uncle and cost me $78,000.
So, I'm so sorry you went through that, man.
It happens. Definitely. It happens. I'm not the only business owner that has had a blunder like that. That's the saving grace of the whole thing, right? Other people have had similar experiences that I have spoken to, not in this industry, but in other industries, where it was far more than the 78,000, or they saw the red flags and they didn't take action because it was a superstar, or they didn't want to deal with it at the time, or they wanted to go on vacation or whatever was going on, right?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
Well, there are so many red flags that we can see along the way. And right. I think one of the keys is to, as a business owner, to be keenly aware, hey, I'm looking at a red flag right now. And it happens to be waving at me.
Like and in so your
I'm
face.
Gonna, yeah, nice. I'm going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to address it because it's not comfortable and nobody likes confrontation. And no. Especially in the house cleaning industry, we are people pleasers by nature. We right. want to do right and make people's lives better. We don't want to tear them apart and say, shame on you or whatever. And so to stop and look at that red flag, it can often be done in private. And I've taken a lot of employees to the side, like privately, hey, can I check in with you for a minute and pull them aside and say, listen, there's something going on that I'm hoping you can share with me. It seems like there's something that you're involved in here and I need you to share with me all the details because I'm missing some stuff. And from where I am, it looks like a waving red flag. I'm sure that's not the case. Can you clue me in? And then with all forgiveness, can we make this right? Can we start this over? And is it too late to turn back the clock and fix this? Because right. if we can't fix this moving forward, this is not going to work for me. This is not sustainable. And sometimes they're like, I'm out of here. Okay, great. And they could go quietly without having a prayer meeting and not without causing a fuss and without bringing it out on the table or embarrassing anyone. And my first goal is always, can we do this privately without shaming anyone? Because I don't agree. Want anyone yeah. to walk away with their head shameful. Like now I don't feel like I can go get another job. I feel like people hate me. I trusted these people and now no one wants to talk to me. I don't want that to happen. And so if we can resolve it one-on-one, that's always my first preference. And if it's not me involved, if it's like two coworkers, I say, guys, I don't need to know the details. I will have you guys go out and work it out amongst yourselves. And I give them both credit. You're both mature. You're both adults. Mm-hmm. You're both professionals. You both know great communication skills. And I'm sure that within a conversation, you guys can work this out. And between the two of you, we'll be able to resolve it. Okay. And if you can't resolve it, that's okay with me. Only one of you needs to come back. And I don't care which one of you it is, but I don't need to be involved. I just need this particular incident to go away. So y'all go work it out and then come back when it's better. And oftentimes both of them come back and they're like, okay, we're good now. I never had to know what it was.
You know? I love the not having to be involved in every step of that. I just absolutely positively love that.
It's way easier.
Definitely. It is way easier. And then it gives them a decision on whether they're going to stay or not. there's a couple more questions and I'm apologizing. My notes, I got them all scrambled up. My son was trying to get a hold of me. So please forgive me if I wasn't totally on top of that. So did we already discuss effective marketing and branding? Did we go over that piece?
Not yet.
Okay. So what kind of marketing strategies have you found most effective in growing a cleaning business? I know this is such a broad question and this changes so much. I once heard you talk about your YouTube channel and how you add in all of those things and how you maximize every piece of video that you get your hands on by either creating them into reels or putting them into shorts. Or repurposing all of these things. Can you kind of give the highlights of that to this audience here so that they can take advantage of what you shared, that golden nugget that you shared with me that one day, which I took notes on. I was like, okay. But if you wouldn't mind sharing that aspect of it, it would be awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah. The first thing about marketing is know what you sell and know what you don't sell.
Right.
And then the second part of that is know to whom you sell. And so if you're selling cleaning services, you're selling cleaning services. You're not selling, you know, wood cutting and you're not selling window washing. You're selling house cleaning services. So be clear on what it is you're selling and be clear on what it is you mm-hmm. don't sell. So if you don't shampoo carpets, then don't shampoo carpets. And if a customer says, hey, do you shampoo carpets? I do not. We do not buy. Here's somebody I'd love to recommend.
Right.
So when we're talking about marketing, know what you sell and know what you don't sell and know to whom you're selling. Now, anything that you create, you can sell to that audience because you know what it is you're selling. And so we have a YouTube channel. It's called Ask a House Cleaner. You can ask a house cleaning question. And in the process of that, if we're going to record a podcast or a YouTube show, which is it? And when I started my cleaning business online, when I started doing a training company, I asked myself, what am I able to do? And I think this goes back to any business owner that's going to be marketing a business. How are you going to market and what is your budget? And you have to base your marketing on your budget. When I started my YouTube channel, I didn't have any budget at all. And I said, what can I do? Well, what do I know? I mean, I know the cleaning business, but I don't know editing. I don't know video. I don't know YouTube. I don't know any of these things. What can I do? Well, I can talk. I know how to talk. So I will talk. And then I said, I don't know anything about cameras and lighting and setup and all that stuff. So what can I do? Well, I can figure out one simple setup. Well, you're looking at it right now. This is my one simple setup. I set up some lights and a camera and I stand in front of this backdrop. And this is a 10-foot by 8-foot stretch fabric trade show display, what you're looking at behind me. I didn't even know how to do green screen. So what happens is this, what can I do? I can put a microphone on me and I can record and that becomes my podcast and my camera becomes my YouTube show. And then what's cool is this, when we edit the audio, we can snap it together and that becomes the YouTube show. And then we cut out the little mistakes or whatever. We can add B-roll into that and that becomes a YouTube show for YouTube. I can market through a podcast and through YouTube. Then we take the words, and right now it's all automated thanks to AI. But before AI, we paid a transcription service that would type out every word. And they would take that transcription, and the transcription becomes closed captioning in all of the videos.
And thank God, captioning we're finally doing that.
Can be read in any language. So that's 191 languages that the YouTube show can be read in. Mm. But that content, that text, that transcript can be taken over to a blog editor that could turn that into a blog. And so now we had three different types of content for three different types of people. Some people love to watch videos. Some people love to listen to videos while they're walking their dog, which is the audio version of the podcast. And some people like to just scan online and skip through and read the highlights of something that's on a blog. So there are different ways you can market your business. But the question is, what is your budget? What is your audience? And what are you selling? And once you're really clear about that, you can repurpose that a multiplicity of different ways. Now, right now we are on a live stream call and I do like this is all three of us. And I do this, you know, around my face for those of you that are listening to the podcast. But what happens is this, at the end of a live stream, and we do this a lot at my company now, we do live stream shows. Kimberly was on one of our live stream shows the other day. And after the hour long live stream is over, we cut that up into little snippets. So little tiny horizontal snippets where that's a little tiny YouTube show that can then be repurposed on our YouTube channel. Or we can cut it up into a little vertical. For those of you that can't see me, I'm doing like skinny lines in front of my face here, which is like a smartphone vertical. You can cut it up into a vertical where we only had then Kimberly on camera talking about the pure evergreen chemicals, right? That she's created, the cleaning supplies. So that's really awesome because now you have a variety of different ways you can multi-purpose content. And thank goodness we live in an era where for a few dollars, you can have a really awesome piece of software that will help you repurpose content a multiplicity of ways. And so the technology is already available to us. We just have to start thinking in terms of how am I going to use this and how am I going to reach my audience? And is this particular content going to social media? Is this going to a podcast? Is this an audio version or a video version or a book version or a booklet version or an email sequence? Or how are we going to multi-purpose this content? And once you're clear on that, the repurposing becomes a game.
Right? I'm always amazed by your marketing. Like her marketing just blows me away for just how she edits videos. And I'm not going to lie, Angela. I'm going to be honest with you. I still have all your stuff that I still need to put in my YouTube and do all that stuff, but I haven't figured out how to do it. And I know there's directions, but I get overwhelmed because I have ADHD. So I get overwhelmed. So I'm going to actually have, you know, Amy help me on some of this stuff to do that because that's not my strength. So, but I admire you. You blow me away with your marketing and how you do all your video editing. And I'm always so blown away by it.
Well, thank you. I want to highlight the fact that you're not alone because most cleaners are excellent cleaners. And we ask a lot of ourselves by saying, oh, look, now I'm a business owner. No, you're not. You're a cleaner. And so when you become a business owner, you're like, oh my goodness, now I got to go take a business class and I got to take an accounting class.
So
and I
got to
take an employee management class. Yeah. And so the fact that you may not be an expert yet at marketing doesn't mean you won't. It's just there are so many things you have to learn to run a business. And so what is the highest priority thing I got to know? Maybe it's QuickBooks. And before you're going to learn how to edit videos, you're going to learn QuickBooks or something, right? So there are so many things you have to learn. And if you have, like Shannon mentioned, if you have a relative that's working for you that's causing chaos in your business, your priority might be employee management. Or what are the legal mm-hmm. issues of me having to fire someone? And can I fire someone with just cause? And what is that just cause? That might come way sooner than learning how to repurpose a video or something, right? So depending on the priorities of where you are in your business is going to absolutely dictate what comes next for you. So don't beat yourself up because nobody was born a marketer, especially if they're already focused on something else, which is like the cleaning end of things.
Exactly. Give me graphic design work. I can do that.
There you go.
Awesome. So what kind of, just so the audience knows, when you had mentioned, because I know it will get asked, what kind of blog, if you were at the point in your business where you could start to DIY some of this, or if you had a team like you do, what kind of blog editor do you know? What kind of blog editor you guys are currently using for transcribing and getting that blog post out? Is there a preference?
Yes. In fact, there are so many AI programs available on the market right now that I would recommend. And so right now, like we hired a service like early on in my YouTube, which is like 2017 all the way to like 2022. And like suddenly 2022 is like the year that everything busted open with AI. And there's a program now called Descript. And you can take a video like the one that Kimberly is mentioning, and you can upload that video and it will automatically transcribe it for you. It writes the whole entire thing word verbatim. And you're like, whoa.
And Kimberly, like, hallelujah, just said, time saver.
Kimberly just said, I'm not very good at video editing. Okay, well, if you're not very good at editing, let me ask you this. Are you good at editing a script? She go, yeah, I can read. Okay, what's cool about Descript is this, and this is not sponsored. I just want to share this with you because it's a tool I love and I use it every day. But what happens is, let's say that I'm making a video and I say the same thing twice, like I just did. When I upload that video, it's going to say the same thing twice because I just said it twice. So you literally highlight the second version of that and you clip it out. When you clip it out, it clips it out from the timeline on the bottom. It actually just cut it out of your video. And you're like, no way. That's so cool. What's really cool about it is this. Let's say that I wanted to add some B-roll. So for example, Kimberly came on our show and she's talking about pure evergreen cleaning chemicals where there may be a home where the family members have allergy sensitivities. Mm-hmm. And so what you can do is instead of just saying those words, what would be really awesome is if we had somebody with like bloodshot eyes and they had their nose that was itchy and maybe they were like have a kerchief and they were trying to like, you know, fix their face. Okay. That would be cool. What happens is you add one forward slash. This is in Descript. One forward slash right before the part where you're talking about a family with allergies.
Okay.
And suddenly it opens up this library and it's a paid program. And with the paid program, it gives you licensing rights to B-roll that you did not take. So you don't have to become the photographer. Don't have to become the photographer and go out and take all the photos. What happens is you do a search now, stuffy, runny nose, bloodshot eyes, and like 20 videos pop up. And you look through them and you're like, that one. And when you click on the button, like forward slash and forward slash. Okay. This is the beginning of the sentence. This is the end of the sentence. You put the second forward slash wherever you want. But it will take the clip and it will cut it exactly between those two spots. So now you're talking about the bloodshot eyes. Boom, it cuts the clip and it drops it right into your timeline. You're like, that is so cool. And then it just goes back to somebody talking normally, right?
And it's called B-roll?
It's called Descript. D-E-S-C-R-I-P-T. Yeah, the B-roll is all of the video footage that you did not take with your own camera. Now, let me rephrase that because you can have B-roll from your own camera, but this is not like right now you're looking at my face. Okay. So this is camera number one. If I were to add any other camera movements in, that's going to be B-roll. So like if I were talking to you and suddenly I showed you at my computer using Descript, that would be B-roll, right? Okay. So it's going to be like the video that you use to help tell your story.
It's like a transition.
Yeah.
If you went from forward facing to side facing and then they went back and they showed you like the plate that they're eating and then they show you again, it's forward facing. That would be.
Yeah, you're going to have other clips. So anyway, but Descript has all that built in and it's phenomenal. So anyway.
I love it. And then we all know that you have done a phenomenal job with branding and your reputation in the cleaning mm-hmm. industry. Can you offer any beginner's advice for all the newbies out there who are just trying to start figuring this all this stuff out?
Reputation management is really an interesting topic, and it is one that will drive your business forever. And so when we talk about branding, I want to say that the same rules apply to reputation management. Know what it is you do and know what it is you do not do. Because if you're very crystal clear about those things, you'll be able to communicate those things to your employees and your customers and your audience. And if you're not clear about what it is you do and you're not clear about where your boundaries are, nobody knows. So anything goes. So if you're really clear about your brand, and here's an example. In our business, and this was years ago, I hired a girl that cussed like a sailor. Oh, she cussed all the time. And that was just her expression of free speech. Okay, that's cool. But we got fired. We got fired from a customer's house who said, you know, we're religious people. We don't cuss like that in our house. And I don't like those words used around my kids. And when we looked at that account, because it was a biweekly account, that account cost us $5,700 a year.
Right.
Because of cussing.
Right.
And I said, wait a second. Here's what I don't know. And this goes back to making a mistake. Then you say, we made a mistake, but what if we were to fix it right now so we didn't do this forever? How many customers have we lost due to her salty language that we didn't know we lost because nobody had the courtesy to tell us? How many customers have we lost at $5,700 a year? That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
This company now no longer cusses. We do not say any cuss words in front of ourselves, in private, to our customers, in our social media. We're not going to do it. We are not going to use cuss words ever, ever in front of our clients. New rules. And everybody's like, how dare you make us stop cussing? Because it cost us $5,700 for one client, the one client that told us.
Right.
Right. So here's what happens. There are a lot of people that cuss. That's okay. You can cuss all you want. But please don't cuss around us or our customers. That's not how we do in business. And on day one, when you come to take a job, we tell you, do not cuss. All right. What happens is we got known for the no cussing company. People are like, they don't cuss. And people are like, they don't cuss. Wow, that's who we need to hire. And we got a whole bunch of people that hired us as a result of that. Okay. Also, brand deals on YouTube started coming to us saying, wait a second, you're like Disney. You don't cuss. I'm like, no, we do not. Okay, now we're safe. We're a safe bet. Advertisers can run ads on our channel because we don't cuss. We're not going to say anything that's racial, anything that's mean, anything that's unkind. We're not bullies and we don't cuss. And so that becomes your reputation and that's how people start to know you. And if that is true, then when we interact with anyone, those are the rules. And if you're on YouTube, I promise you, you will have trolls and you will have haters and people will come at you and they'll try to make you cuss and they'll make you want to cuss. And the reality is the same rules apply. And so although we have haters that are like slamming us with negativity and mean things, we have to stop and say, we don't engage in that because that's not who we are. That is not our reputation. Because anything you say can and will be screenshotted. It will be shared on social media. It will be twisted and altered if at all possible. Yep. People will put words in your mouth. And here's the catch. Here's what's really interesting. I just shared with you a program called Descript. What I didn't tell you about Descript is this. They have a program called overdubbing. So I can upload my podcasts and it learns my voice. Then I can type anything I want and in Angela's voice, Angela will say those words. So it spooked me. I know. Welcome to AI. And the coolest part is I could create a course, for example, with my voice when I wasn't actually there at all. I was just typing it. But the catch is this. Should someone hear that, they will have to ask themselves the question, did Angela really say that? Or does that go against her brand?
Right.
And people will go, that's not Angela. She would never say that. That goes against her brand. That's not her brand. When your customers know your brand so well, they go to bat for you. They will fight for you because they know your brand, and that's reputation management at its finest. We go to a customer's house and we say, listen, while I'm at your house, I'm going to break your stuff. They're like, what? I don't want to break your stuff, right? I don't want to. But every once in a while, it happens 3 or 4 times a year. I move hundreds and thousands of things in the process of cleaning homes and picking up stuff and cleaning underneath them and wiping them down. And eventually something will slip out of my hands and it will go crashing to the floor. And I'm always horrified when it happens.
Right.
But I'm going to make you a promise right now. I'm insured. I'm bonded. I'm not going to steal anything from your house, and I will break something. And when I do, I will always tell you. And so if you find something broken in your house and I didn't tell you, it wasn't me. Okay. And there are people that are like, oh, my house cleaner broke something. And they're like, no, she didn't. If she didn't tell you, she didn't break it. Because every time she's ever broken something, she's come right to us. She's offered to pay for it immediately. She's made it right. She would not break something. She did not do it. And your customers will, like with their neighbors, they will go to bat for you. And that's reputation management. So as a newbie, know what you sell, know what you sell, know what you do in your company, and know what your rules are, and then follow them to a T. I know it sounds really boring and it sounds like, oh, no, that's really hard to do. It is hard to do. But here's the thing. It is the best marketing you'll ever do. Because once everybody knows what it is you stand for and what it is you represent, everyone then can turn around and sell that to their friends. Here's what they know. When we send this company to your house, I want to refer you to my friend. You're going to show up in a uniform. You're going to show up professional. You're going to show up with clean supplies. You're not going to cross-contaminate. You're going to be honest. You're going to follow through. If you break something, you're going to replace it. All of your people are insured. You're not going to cuss in their house. It's a series of things. And people go, oh, that's totally the company that I want to recommend to my friend. Because they know when they recommend you to their friend, you are a sure bet. And so when it comes to reputation management, make sure that your company is a sure bet under all circumstances, at all times, for all reasons, no exceptions.
That's I do have a question.
Really good information. Wow.
Go ahead, Kim.
Oh, no, I just was blown away because I'm just in awe because you are so right, Angela. It's like you have to set the standards. And when you stand by those standards, you are setting a brand for yourself. You're setting a name for yourself. And that's branding in its finest. I'm in awe of that. Thank you for that. And what were you going to say, Shannon? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I had a question. With the cleaner with a salty language, did she change her tune or did she go on her way?
Oh, yeah.
That's an interesting conversation because it's really hard to go to someone and say, hey, you need to change your song and dance, if you will. But I took her aside and we looked at all of the clients that she was working for. And we looked at all of the clients she had worked for over the past year that had canceled our service. And I said, I'm very curious to know how many of these customers canceled for this very reason. And I said, but here's one customer who had the courage to come forward and say, this is the reason why we're firing you. And I said, is it worth it to us to change the rules of our policies? And she was, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I'm so sorry. Uh-huh. Let's make the new rules. And she came forward to the team and she told our team, hey, listen, all of you know that I cuss like a sailor and whatever. And she said, we're doing a new policy. And she's the one that introduced it to the team and said, if I can stop cussing, all of you can. And they were like,
that's awesome.
What? We got to stop cussing. And I was like, let's, I mean, we don't get any free points for cussing. Nobody gives us any bonuses or tips or anything for cussing. Maybe we could keep our jobs by not cussing, right? We have more to gain from not cussing than we do by cussing. We don't get any brownie points for cussing. But here's the thing. If we cuss and people are not recommending us because of our salty language, does it make sense that we stop our salty language? They're like, yeah, cool. Let's do that. So I think it comes down to the way that you handle it because it could have been an embarrassing situation, like shame on you. But then that doesn't empower anyone to want to change.
Right.
You know?
I like how you presented it to a question to her. Like you presented a question to her to let her come with the answer. I really liked how you presented that.
Well, and that goes back to sometimes you have to take employees aside and you have to have one-on-one with them. And one of the things that we've done successfully in our company since about... I date myself, but I want to say since probably 1993, is that every Monday I have alignment meetings with each individual person on my team. And there's a 15-minute segment that is reserved just for them. And so if they want that session, they can tell me Sunday night by 6 o'clock, because they turn in all their projects Sunday night at 6 o'clock. They can either say, I want to hold that accountability session for tomorrow, or I'm good for this week. I don't need to meet with you. And if they don't need to meet with me, woohoo, I just go on and I do something else, right? But if they say, no, I need that time. I want to meet with you one-on-one. We sit down and we go over stuff like this every single week. Like, how are you doing? What do I need to know? Is there, you know, you have issues with another coworker? Is there issue with a customer? Is there something that you want to share with me? And what it does is it prevents this, because this is a trap a lot of cleaning business owners get into. When the cleaner comes to drop off their stuff at the end of the day, they chitty chat like, oh, so-and-so did this, mm-hmm. that, and the other today. And that can take up an hour of every evening. And I don't have an hour every evening to give all the employees. And then right. an hour in the morning when they come to pick up their stuff. I mean, that's 2 hours out of the day none of us get paid for. So in all fairness, let's not do that. Save it for this 15-minute meeting each mm-hmm. week. Write it down, put it in your progress report if I need to see it before then. And then every Monday, let's sit down, you and me, eyeball to eyeball, and we'll work through all your issues. And I want you to spend the rest of the week while you're cleaning and your thoughts are in your head, how might we solve this problem? Don't just throw a problem at me. Come to me with a solution and say, I thought of three different ways we might resolve this. And then I'll help you pick which one is the most advantageous, right? And so every week they have 15 minutes that has their name on it that I will not book anything on top of. And I've scheduled it throughout the week now because we have a bigger team, but everybody has a 15-minute uninterrupted with me each week. And what's really helpful about that is there are times I've called people on the carpet and I don't nag during the week. But it might be Tuesday and I got to go all the way till next Monday before we have this conversation. I'm like, all right, let me see if I can work this out in my head, right? But I have sat down with people and I've said, this is unacceptable behavior. We're not doing this. And they're like, right, we're not. Totally, I got it, right? And so we can have those kinds of conversations, but it's in how you approach them. And it's knowing that only once a week we're going to have a conversation where I'm going to ask you, you know, in a perfect world, if we could change one thing, here's the one thing I'd change this week. And they're like, oh, right, like right. That. Totally. I'm on that. I totally can do that. You know, and it's not overwhelming to them as if you are nagging all the time or trying to change 45 things of theirs in a week, right? Keep it minimal, make it fair.
I love that. It gives you a great connection to your team and it kind of makes sure that you have a pulse on what's going on amongst the troops, you know, if there's dissent or if there's collaboration or whatever side of the fence it ends up falling on. I think that's awesome. Definitely.
Well, and there are employees that are like, I never need to talk to you. I'm good. And I'm like, I'm checking your progress and you're right. You're good. You're doing a fantastic job. Don't meet with me. And then there are every once in a while I call them and I'm like, no, you need to get in here. And I might give them a bonus or something and say, you know, you never come in, you never cause havoc or whatever. And I wanted to give you a bonus. And it's a great time to give them a bonus privately if you're not going to give a bonus to everybody, you know?
Right.
I like that.
There's a way to make it work for you. And if I just haven't checked in with somebody in a long time, I'll say, come on in. And we do have quarterly reviews. The quarterly reviews are where we sit down and it's me and my director of operations, where we sit down and we evaluate everything and I have them evaluate their own progress. So it's not a surprise, but now they kind of know what I'm looking at, you know? So.
Definitely. I want to be conscientious of your time. And I know that we're not moving as fast as we possibly could be. So do you have a little bit more time to give us today, Angela?
I do. And I want to be fair to your time as well. So cut me off at any time if need be, and I can go longer if you need be.
So. Okay. So I know that we've kind of hit around the employee training management, yeah. And we've talked a little bit about that. We've touched it a couple of times. What kind of methods are you using to train and motivate your employees? And I know that, do you still currently have a cleaning business? I don't remember if you do or not.
I don't. I sold my cleaning business in the summer of 2015. Gotcha. We had a troubled teenager that came to live with us and I had to 24/7 care, basically. Gotcha. She was destructive and suicidal and a bunch of things. And so I then moved online to train because that's what I know. And I've been training other cleaning companies ever since. And okay. As a result of that, I was actually training for since like my third month in the business. I've been training for 32 years in the cleaning business. But since 2015, I've been doing it full time, and I'm on site like 2 days a week with other training companies out there cleaning with other cleaning companies as inside people's homes or inside, working with other cleaning companies.
I love that.
There's not a day that goes by to this day that I'm not vacuuming or mopping a floor or cleaning out a toilet or on my hands and knees behind a toilet or whatever. So
I love it.
In my blood, and I'm not out of it yet.
Awesome. So what kind of methods and or training are you using to motivate them so that they can motivate their employees? I think that would be really a great thing to say to all of the people out there listening.
So every cleaning company has their own specific set of rules and regulations in the way that they clean. And so I think it's really important that whatever training you've decided, whether you've decided that everybody is going to wear a uniform or that everybody is going to use a particular type of mop or a particular type of duster or whatever, that everybody is on the same page. And so my requirements are: be very clear about what your rules and regulations are. Be very clear about what your method of cleaning is. Do you use a duster when you dust everything, or do you use a damp microfiber cloth? Both are okay. What I really hate is where people go, "That's not the way I learned. I'm not going to do it that way." Every company has their own way of doing it. And so you have to know what your way is, and then you have to train your people on that way. And if you will keep it super simple, it is going to be easy to duplicate. And so super simple is my requirement and rules for everybody. Mm-hmm. So have a checklist that you follow, and then everything on that checklist is what we do on every maintenance clean. If you're doing a deep clean, have a different deep clean checklist. And then make sure that you have, we call it a tall pack and a small pack. The tall pack is for our deep cleaning. And I do like this, like pointing up at the roof. And that's because we're going to get all of the upper things that you cannot reach standing on the floor flat footed with your Swiffer duster in your hand above your head. Anything I can reach flat footed standing on the floor with my Swiffer duster above my head is going to be done on a maintenance clean. Anything above that, like ceiling fans and recessed lighting and all that stuff, will be done on a deep clean. So that's the tall pack with the tall equipment. The small pack is everything that's on small on the ground, right? You got to have really clear, definite tools, processes, and systems that you use for the cleaning. And then if everybody on your team is that way, it's really, really, really easy then to duplicate that and replicate that when you hire new people. You say, hey, you're a small pack person, work with a small pack person. You guys shadow each other for a couple of days. You do this. And then when you are ready, you advance to the tall pack and I'll put you on training with someone else that does all of our deep cleaning. And so it just depends on how your company is set up. If you're a onesie or a twosie company, meaning one or two people, one of you may do the deep cleaning, one of you may do the maintenance cleaning, or maybe you both hit the house at the same time. One of you does wet cleaning, one of you does dry cleaning. There's so many different ways to do it, but be consistent. Be consistent and keep it simple. Because here's the reason. In the end, you don't want to have to be the person that does all the training every time.
Right.
You want everybody to be able to replicate that process. And if it's easy to replicate, everybody can train each other because everybody does it the same way. The secret is this, and this is the secret across the board. Have everybody do the same things the same way.
Like so McDonald's.
No,
like McDonald's. You got to be like McDonald's.
I'm not kidding, because like even with our graphic design, like in our business, we have 10 or 12 people that are working on different graphic design projects. Every project must be labeled the same way, and it must be stored in a specific file. And the reason being is anywhere on the team can go to that particular file and they know exactly what they're looking for. Boom, problem solved. It's the same thing in a cleaning caddy. Everybody's cleaning caddies are stacked the same way. We're going to know that on every house, we have these six supplies. We have these sponges. We have these brushes, right? Everybody's doing it the exact same way. And not to say no creativity allowed, but what happens then is you go into a house. What do you know? I know that that's in my cleaning caddy in the bottom right-hand corner. I know exactly where that is. And if something happens and you end up shadowing somebody on a job, OMG, there's an emergency. We need to send you over to another house. And you run over to another house mid-job and you left your caddy here with the team that's here. You go over to that other job, you know there's a caddy waiting for you and you know exactly how it's stocked and where everything is. Boom. And it's easy to replicate. So the secret is be simple. Keep it really simple. Keep it really scalable.
I remember one of my employees, we had, you know, we did the same thing with our bags and it was very simple and everything had the same things in it. And I remember like it was time for them to come back and clean out their bags. And I know she pulled out like a thing, a comment, and we don't use comment. Like it was not in our bags. And I said, where did you get this? And she goes, oh, I brought it from home so I can use it. And I said, no. And I had to go back and I had to explain. I said, no, we need to be trained on all the same products. And we represent having an eco-friendly cleaning company. And I want to know everything that is in the bag. So that way, when we do have new people at start, they're not going to be wanting to get other stuff and adding things to their bags. And then you don't want to be in, like, it's an insurance claim too. Like, let's say she uses that comment on a product, on an item, a surface, and that was not in our bags. And that was not what was trained on. That can come back as an insurance claim, or a homeowner can complain that something was scratched.
And the catch to that is this, and this is the ugly part of insurance claims. And I'm glad you brought that up. If you are a professional cleaner and you've been hired to clean someone's home, you are expected to know chemical safety.
Right.
And so if you have a cleaning supply that is in your care, custody, and control, which is the legal term, and if for some reason you damage an item at a customer's house, your insurance company is actually not going to cover it because it was in your care, custody, and control. And here's the catch. You're expected to know how to use it. And if you don't use it the proper way, or if you go against the manufacturer's labels, like, oh, well, this worked really good on this, maybe it will work really good on this, and you're experimenting on customer service surfaces, the insurance company is not going to cover it because you're supposed to know what you're doing. And so if it's an accident, okay, they'll cover it. But if you were supposed to know what you were doing, you damaged it with chemical something or another, and I see damage every day. People are like, oh, I ruined this in the customer sink. What do I do now? You buy them a new sink.
Right.
That's the answer. So I hate that, but we have to have that conversation.
Yep.
Or they actually add on more chemicals to try to buffer the process of whatever they've ruined. We see that a lot as well. It's phenomenal. It's always a panic when they call.
But like Kimberly says, and this is really important, it's important that you know what's inside your caddy, and it's important that you know what's inside the caddy of your employees. And then that has to be in your rules. Like they get written up if they bring something from home. And if a customer invites them to use a chemical that's not approved, that has to go through the company. That has to be cleared first.
Definitely. And then we have some regulations and compliance. What are the regulatory requirements and certifications that cleaning businesses should be aware of? I know that there's, you know, the ISSA. I know that you offer it on your website as well. There's a lot of new things coming onto the scene, which is awesome. What are some of the best suggestions you have for our industry for today?
If you're looking at compliance, and compliance is all across the board, okay? So let's not pretend that the rules don't apply to us. It's really easy to go, well, I'm different, I'm special. No, you're not. And all of the rules apply to you, okay? And so what that means is every driver that drives to a job must have a driver's license, okay? No exceptions, none. They must be insured. They must have car insurance, no exceptions. If they're going to clean a customer's house, they must be insured for the job. That's a general liability policy, no exceptions. And so the rules apply to you every single step along the way. If you have a team of people, they must have workers' comp, no exceptions. And so if you'll break down every single thing as far as certifications go, there are OSHA certifications that says if you have a series of cleaning supplies at your location that you send to customers' homes, you must have safety data sheets, and they must be available on site so that all of your employees know what those safety data sheets say. You got to know what all the chemicals are, and you got to know how to use them, right? And so there are compliance issues all along the way. There are employment issues that say, if I have an employee that's out on a job for 4 hours by the Fair Labor Standard Act, this is in the United States. It might be different in other countries, but they must have a 15-minute break on a 4-hour window. And if they go for 6 hours, they get a 30-minute break for lunch. And so there are rules and regulations that must be followed according to the Fair Labor Standard Acts. We got to pay taxes. And so people are like, well, you know, if I just got paid cash and I don't tell anyone, then no one will ever really know. Guess what? It's a compliance issue. You got to pay your taxes. It's not a game, and you're not above the law. Right. So if you're going to be in business and you're going to stay in business and you're not going to get sued or get, you know, arrested or tax fraud or whatever, you got to follow all the rules. And there are a bunch of rules. And what's really weird in the United States is that there are jurisdictions in some areas, like counties, cities, states, like there are a bunch of different jurisdictions. And some will say you must have a business license. Well, then go down to the county courthouse and pay your $30 and get a business license. And if it says you got to pay taxes on the computer that you own, that you run from your business, then pay taxes on the computer that you own in your business. Don't think for any reason that none of the rules apply to you, or only these two rules apply to me and all these over here don't. They all apply to you if you're a business. Okay. So figure out what the rules and regulations are based on the type of business that you have and based on the business that you're operating. And so you might need workers' comp. You might need a tools and equipment policy for insurance. I know for us, we do. We do. It's part of our regulations because we offer special packages. And with that, we use like electric drill brushes and things like that, where there's odd ends and equipment that we use. We use step ladders and things like that. And we use poles that go over your head that do like tall ceiling fans in two-story rooms. Okay. So for all of our equipment, we have a tools and equipment policy, and we have professional auto insurance policy, and we have workman's comp, and we have all the things, right? Whatever the type of business is, and it's going to vary based on the specifics of your business, but find out the rules and requirements and then follow all of them, all of them. And I know it's expensive. And a lot of people are like, well, I'm just getting started. So like, I'm not going to have insurance until like I earn money. Like, dude, right now, get insurance. If you make one mistake right now, all the money you are ever going to earn is going to be gone. And you'll be forced into bankruptcy to pay for whatever it is you're about to damage. So pay for the insurance right now. And ask for them to put it on a payment plan so you're paying by month instead of the whole entire year at a one whoop.
Definitely. Kim and I talk about insurance all of the time. Preach it, Kim.
Yeah. We're always talking about it. We're like, it just takes one time. Is it worth it, you guys? And then charging for the clean, enough for the clean so you're able to cover all your business expenses. These people that charge, you know, $20 an hour. How are you going to cover your insurance? How are you going to cover if you broke something because you don't have insurance? Yeah, we talk about it so much. I think it's
when I first bought insurance, I didn't have the money to pay for it. Okay. And a lot of startup business owners don't. And so if you find yourself in this situation where you don't have the money for insurance, do this. Be honest. Go to a customer that says, I'm interested in hiring a cleaner. I would love to clean your house. I really need a chance. Will you give a chance on me? And here's the chance. I would like to clean your house and it's going to cost X amount of dollars and I need the money up front because I don't have any insurance and I want to run go buy insurance right now with the money that you're going to give me so that when I come to your house to clean your house, I'm insured. They're going to go, wow, that's really responsible. I admire that. Yes, here's the money up front. And they're going to give you the money up front and you're going to clean the house and then you're going to whatever. And give them something collateral if you have to. Somebody took a chance on me and I didn't have to give them any collateral like a watch or a child or something. but I was able then to pay for insurance and then I was able to clean their house. And then from then on, I had insurance. I earned enough money on residual jobs. I could keep paying for the insurance and I have insurance to this day, even though check it out. I don't have a regular active cleaning business to this day. I still have insurance because I am on site with other cleaning companies every single day or two times a week. And if that's the case, I still have to be insured.
Right.
So I still have insurance to this day.
Because I do the same thing.
Yeah. So
it's best to have it just in case, because I have cleaning business owners that come up from Phoenix all of the time. And I just don't want to ever take the chance. I don't ever want to go there. No.
But nobody is above the rules. Nobody is above the rules. Everybody has to follow the rules. So there you go.
Definitely.
So I want to know, what is the most valuable lesson you've learned from your experience in the cleaning industry? We all want to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
Oddly enough, it is not about cleaning.
Really?
The most interesting lesson that I learned in the cleaning business is that as a business owner, my business is bigger than me. Let me re-say that a different way. What happens in my business is bigger than just me. So my rock and my support system and my vision for the future is my husband. And so I went to him when I was already in the cleaning business when I met him, but I said, hey, I'm getting married to you and I'm staying in the cleaning business. Here's what I'm doing. And I want to let you know right up front that you are my first priority over my business. If I have to choose you or my business, I choose you. And so I'm going to make every decision based on us and the power of us and not my business. And so I'm going to be involved in my business and I've got a lot of employee issues. I've got a lot of hiring issues. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen that's going to cause chaos in our personal lives. And I want to keep you in line every step of the way so that you're on board with what I'm doing. And he said, okay, cool. And there are so many times I've gone, I've said, look, I'm in a bind. I'm really freaked out. I'm stressed out. I'm whatever. And he's been there for me every step of the way. And there are times I've been working late and he comes in, and he says, hey, do you remember how you said me or the business? Like right now I'm calling me, like, come in and let's watch a movie and have dinner. I'm like, you're right. Let's do that. I dropped what I was doing and I went in then to be part of the family. Okay. But I can't tell you how many times over the years, and we've celebrated 21 years of marriage, but over the years, there are so many things that have collided in my personal life because of the business. And I had to keep coming back saying, what do I do now? And because he was always number one over my business, the most important lesson I ever learned was keep that as the sacred go-to. Okay. If I have to make a choice, it will always be him first. I will walk away from the business 1,000 times before I will walk away from him. And it's because he's been in every step of the way with me. And I know he's got my back and I know he's got my best interest. And because it's such a sacred relationship to me, I won't jeopardize it by anything. It doesn't matter if it's an employee, if it's a customer, if it's a client, it doesn't matter if the whole entire world collides. If I had to make a choice, he wins. And so that's the most important lesson is who is your support system and what do you have to do to protect that and then protect that at all costs? Because your business will come and go. You can always start another business. You can't always start another family. You can't always find another person that believes in you on days when you don't believe in yourself. And so if there is somebody like that in your life, you protect that relationship at all costs.
Wow. I think that is the best information. I'm trying not to cry.
I know.
You know, like, where's
I love it. I absolutely love it, Angela. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. My husband is the best decision that I've ever made. And I've been really, really blessed to have gone through my businesses with him. When I started this new revision of my business, and it was probably 2016, when I rebooted my business in 2015 and I went online for the training, I sold my regular cleaning practice and I had about enough runway for 22 months that I didn't need to borrow any family funds. And 22 months in, we'd hired, I don't know, like 15 people and the business had really taken off and we're doing a lot of training and we're doing the YouTube show and a bunch of stuff. And I was 2 weeks between money coming in and payroll. And my payroll was about 10 grand a week. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, uh-oh, I just ran into a snag. I've got money coming in and I've got employees that need to be fed today. Oops, I'm 22 months in and I haven't borrowed any family money and I'm in a creek without a paddle, as they say. And I went to my husband and I said, hey, listen, I've got money coming in and I don't have the money to pay payroll this week and I need 10 grand. What do I do? And he said, well, that's great that you asked. But he said, if there's anyone that I would bet on, it would be you. He said, I've watched how you work. I've seen how you interact with people. And he said, if I would make a bet on anyone, it would be you. And he said, let's mortgage the house. And I said, okay. And I hated to do it, but I mean, I got a whole bunch of people and I got to make payroll today. So we mortgaged the house and I was able to pay that off 2 weeks later when the other money came back. So I didn't put the family in a bind for long, but stuff like that happens in your business. And you have to be really honest about what is actually happening. And if I was making stuff up and I didn't have the money coming in 2 weeks, that could have ruined our marriage, right? And right. So you've got to be really transparent with that one person that really knows and loves you. And then no matter what, you got to say, let's put our heads together. How do we make this work? And there was one time early in my career, like right after we got married, but early in my career, I didn't have the money. And I said, what do I do now? How do I get a loan? And he said, well, you own your car. Why don't you take your car down to the bank or down to the credit union and sell your car to the credit union for a title loan? And I'm like, what? How do you do that? And he said, they will give you payments on your car again, and you can take this money and reinvest it into your business. And the car loan is at a less percent interest rate than a business loan. I was like, oh, that's brilliant, right?
It is brilliant.
But if you have somebody in your corner that has your best interest in mind and they're looking out for you, they can come up with other solutions sometimes that you can't see because you're in your own head. And so those are the kinds of relationships I'm talking about. You got to guard that with your life. And then when stuff happens, like, hey, I have payroll and I don't have the money. Hey, let's mortgage the house. Who's going to say that to you? Right?
Totally. I love it. It's refreshing to hear how tight you guys are. It's, you know, the whole romantic thing that you always see, but you just don't hear about it. My grandparents were really close. And they actually passed away with six weeks between each other, but they had a relationship like that. Yeah. When he passed and then she died of a broken heart. It's going to make me cry.
My tissue here.
I think it's awesome, Angela. Congratulations. Thank you, Kim.
Well, thank you. I do believe that we create the company cultures that support us. And I know right now I have an amazing team. And I think the team would go to the end of the earth for me. And I would go to the end of the earth for them. And so I'm really blessed that I have the team that I have, because right now, nobody works at my company that doesn't want to be here. We don't hold anybody hostage. We don't force people to show up. And we're really flexible as much as we can be. And in a cleaning business, there's not a lot of room for flexibility. And we started doing something since the pandemic that we've never done in the history of my career. And I started letting everyone make their own schedules. And you're like, what? Wow. But what I did was this. I said, you know when you're able to work. I don't. So you fill out the calendar with the hours you're able to work, and I will book the schedule around it. And people are like, I can work during these hours, and then I can work like 2 hours in the night. Great. I'll work with that. And so right now, it's not like, well, I can't work during those hours, because they gave me the hours they're going to work. And right. The catch is, if you don't show up for the hours you said you were going to work, then you get to find your own replacement. Find someone else on the team that can work the hours for the jobs we booked for you, because you said you were going to work those hours. And if you can't find somebody and you can't work your hours, you don't work here anymore. So don't give me hours you can't work, you know? And we've let them completely decide their schedules, which is so weird and backwards. We've never done that. But we have everybody show up on time when they say they're going to be here. So if you can be flexible, and if you can work with your team, and you can work with them at the different levels they're at, because we work with humans, we don't work with robots. Mm-hmm. And everybody on my team, every single person on my team is a parent. They're a child of somebody. They've got like elder parents. They have pets. They have emergencies. They have whatever. They're humans, and humans have emergencies. And so we have to be as flexible as possible with that. And as a result of that, if I work with them, they trip over themselves trying to work with me back in return. And it's a different company culture than, I'm going to write you up for this, that, and the other. You know what I mean? It's just, right. It's a different way of looking at things.
Definitely a human element. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes. There's one thing I'd like to share in conclusion. Everybody that shows up on my team, I ask them at the top of every day, and I want to share this with you. I have a little happy bell. Here's my happy bell.
Oh my gosh. Wait, hold on. Amy, come here. I got to show you this. This is Amy. Hold on. Amy, we're trying to get Amy to start her line of happy pants. This is one of my best friends, Amy, and my worker. Look at the bell.
There's a little happy bell.
A happy bell. It's a happy bell.
I need one of those. Oh my gosh. I need one so badly.
So for those of you that are listening to the podcast, it's like a little call bell that you would find at a hotel counter where you click the little bell. You click the little bell.
She said, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, because you've got headphones on.
Yeah.
That's why she can't hear. I got it. So for those of you that are listening to the podcast, this is like a little call bell that you would find on the counter at a hotel counter, except this is painted bright school bus yellow and it has a happy face on it. And everybody at my company has one sitting next to their workstation. So every time they look up, they see a little happy face looking back at them. And every day when they show up, I ask them how they are. And there's only one right answer. The answer is, I'm beautiful, I'm talented, and I'm wicked smart. And then they ring the happy bell. And what happens is at the top of every day when people show up, it doesn't matter how you showed up, whether you didn't get much sleep last night whether you're discouraged, whether you're frustrated, or you're just having a PMS kind of day, when you show up and you're surrounded in front of an entire room of people and they say, I'm beautiful, I'm talented, and I'm wicked smart, and everybody in the room is saying that, and then they're ringing their little happy bells, I cannot tell you the dopamine high that that gives.
I love it.
And so all throughout the day, anytime somebody does something correctly, instead of just like, oh, hey, yay, I did something special and no one will ever notice, they ring the happy bell. And all of a sudden, everybody rings their happy bells. Like, hey, something good just happened. And we ask each other, what are we celebrating? And someone's like, I just learned how to do this. We're like, no way. Happy bell, ring, 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 ring. Woo!
I need to get one of those for Amy. I think I'm going to wrap it up and put it in a box and put it on her desk.
That's awesome company culture. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
Well, it's very inexpensive, but the thing is this, non-sugar treats to reward the behavior you want repeated. And so that's what the happy bell is all about. It's a great way to say great job. And if nothing else, and I can be clear across the house because I work out of my house. I've got like 10 employees here right now. But while I'm here, I will hear happy bells ringing throughout the day. And I can't drop what I'm doing if I'm in the middle of something, but I'll ring my happy bell. And they're like, whoa, happy bell. Like she chimed in on it. And all of them are like, woo-hoo-hoo. And they're chipping and chirping with each other and whatever. But I'll share this with you. And this goes beyond this. We've got these scattered all over my house. And they come in every different color too. Like here's a blue
one. Oh, there's a blue one. Oh, I love it.
I know. And here's a pink one. Yay.
Shannon, we need these for our podcast just to
So these are super fun. They're super fun. They're green, red, yellow, orange, purple, blue, whatever. And I have them scattered all over. But in my house, and this is how I've trained my husband. I'll close with this. People in our family can also participate. My husband makes the bed. What does he do? He rings the happy bell. He takes out the trash. He rings the happy bell. He empties the fridge. He rings the happy bell. He puts the groceries in from the car. He rings the happy bell. And I ring the happy bell back. It's like, yay, he took out the trash. And everyone is celebrating their wins.
With I love it.
The little way that's like, hey, wait a second. I matter. I counted. And if you didn't notice me, now you do. And then we're like, yay, we notice you now. So it's great for kids. It's great for spouses as well as employees.
And teenagers. I'll try it with the teenagers.
It works for all ages. Like we're middle aged and you know what? It works for us. So yay. Have at it.
We will take it. Thank you, Angela, so much for joining us. What a blessing to have you here with us today and just being able to just get an insight of your world. We appreciate it so much. And we look forward to it, you guys. Thank you for joining Cleaning Business Life. Be sure to subscribe and share. And yeah, I hope everybody has a wonderful day.
Thank you. Oh,
air hugs. Ding, 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 ding.
I really appreciate it. You guys take care.
Bye. Bye, Angela.
Cleaning Business Life is sponsored by Pure Evergreen Cleaning Products. That's PureEvergreen.com. Pure Evergreen Cleaning Products.